The hour has arrived. This is Chairman Mike Sundin. I'll give the 10-second warning for host. Okay, again, this is Chairman Mike Sundin. I'll call to order the meeting of the House Ag Committee. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Mr. Smith, would you take the roll, please?
Chair Sundin.
Present.
Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Representative Eklund.
Eklund present.
Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R present.
Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Thompson. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We have the minutes from our last meeting. Chair Vang, I'm assuming you reviewed them. Can I get a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Okay, we have a motion to adopt the minutes of the meeting of February 7th, 2022. Any questions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Okay, we have the minutes approved. Okay, the governor released his supplemental budget recommendations late last month, and because they are pretty comprehensive, I wanted to provide the committee with an adequate time to hear the recommendations and be able to ask questions if there are any. We'll start the hearing with the supplemental budget recommendations and then finish up with the department's request for bonding. While we don't have a bill in front of us on the bonding, I'd like to send Capital Investment Chair Lee our committee's recommendations for their consideration on a larger bonding bill. Hopefully this presentation and discussion will help inform that recommendation. One note before we get going, we've got some questions about public testimony on the presentation. We fully expect to see a bill that reflects the governor's budget recommendations to be introduced and follow the public hearing process. But our goal today is to fully understand what is being proposed. We will have opportunity to hear from anybody in the public when we schedule the bill in the coming weeks. So we have the presentation of the governor's supplemental budget and capital budget recommendations. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Peterson and team. We look forward to learning more about the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. Please state your name and your presentations. Commissioner Peterson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Tom Peterson. I serve as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And before we jump into the budget, we were going to do this last week. We wanted to introduce members or our staff and have them just come on camera. If we were there in person, we'd have them stand up just so you're familiar and have them just state their title and what they work on. So I will start with our Deputy Commissioner, Andrea Bobble. Andrea.
Thank you, Commissioner. For the record, my name is Andrea Bobble. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Ag. Good to see you all.
Thank you. Is Commissioner Bailey, is he on?
No, he's not.
Okay, I don't see him. Michelle?
Good afternoon, everyone. Michelle Medina, Director of Government Relations here at the Department of Agriculture. Thanks for having us.
And I have just I'll note too, Michelle also assists the Board of Animal Health on their legislative issues as well, working on that. Paul Huguenin.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Huguenin. I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division.
Thank you, Paul. And Ashley.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ashley Brest. I supervise our grant making in the Ag Marketing and Development Division.
Thank you, Ashley. Lucy.
Good
Yes, hello everybody. Lucia Hunt here. I'm the director of the Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response.
Thank you, Lucia. Very important right now with some of the developments we have going on. Margaret Wagner.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. For the record, I'm Margaret Wagner, and I manage our fertilizer non-point section at the Department of Ag.
Brad Redlin.
Hello, Brad Jordahl-Redlin, manager of the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program at MDA. Good to be here this afternoon.
Thanks. Nick Milanowski.
Good afternoon, everyone. Nick Milanowski. I'm the Fruit, Vegetable, and Grain Program Supervisor.
Sherry Kromschroder.
Good afternoon. I'm Sherry Kromschroder. I'm the Finance and Budget Director.
Sherry. Matt McDevitt.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Matt McDevitt. I manage the Rural Finance Authority and the Agricultural Best Management Practice Program.
Thank you. And I think Commissioner Bailey did join us.
I am here. Sorry. Good afternoon. Patrice Bailey, Assistant Commissioner here. I have food and feed safety, meat and dairy inspection, and ag marketing and development.
Well, thank you. And I just wanted to also take a minute to thank committee members. And it was just a week ago today that our Assistant Commissioner, Peter Chesset, unfortunately and untimely lost his young daughter, Tova. And we really have no words, to describe the feeling and sorrow that Peter and his family have, but appreciate those of you that have reached out to him and keep his family in your thoughts as they go forward, his wife Carla and his young son Toroli. It's a difficult situation, and again, just appreciate all the thoughts as Peter moves forward. With that, I would like to get into the PowerPoint. Nancy, if you're I'm going to kick it off and run through a couple slides, then we'll have Commissioner Vabel will take over, and then we'll stand for questions. So we'll get the PowerPoint fired up here. Also, I hope I didn't miss any of our staff. I looked at the chat and did the best I could. I think I got everybody.
Having a little challenge here, sorry.
No worries.
Can you see that?
No.
Okay. Tom, would you just start and then I'll catch up with you?
Sure. Sounds good. Okay. Well, first slide, we were just going to remind people of our mission at the Department of Agriculture is to, now my screen is, hold on a sec here. Our mission at the Department of Agriculture is to enhance all Minnesotans' quality of life by equitably ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength and resilience of our agriculture community. We wanted to provide a quick update on last year's activities. So here you come, you're getting it there. And okay, you can go to the next slide. We just wanted real quick, go back one. Go back
Now you're testing my skill.
Oh, there we go. We just want to give a quick update on a couple of issues. Really thank all the committee for the budget and the work that we did last year passing our budget. We have implemented many of these projects. Just a reminder, though, the bioincentive program, we did increase from $2.5 million a year to $4.5 million per year. We're still not whole on those payments. Second quarter payments are being finalized. We anticipate they will exhaust the first full year of the appropriation. And so that is update on that. On the biofuels infrastructure that the committee worked on last year, which is $3 million per year, and also includes a $1 million donation from the Minnesota Corn Growers. That request for proposal is now open. It just opened last week, and it's open until March 17th. Our meat, poultry, and egg meat processing, really big issue last year. We did $750,000 a year that was just awarded. For that $750,000, we received 64 applications requesting $3.2 million in the first round. We are in the process of finalizing contracts with 14 awardees. We did put an emphasis on slaughter, and we are also pleased to see some halal pieces in there too as well. Farm safety, we did a $100,000 a year last year. We are currently receiving applications and making payments for the grain storage facility and the tractor rollover program. Part of our recommendation in this budget will be to amend the rider to allow us to carry unspent funds from 22 to 23 as we're making those dollars available. The FarmLink program, just a reminder, this is our program at the department that links up farmers with land that is available for them to purchase or rent, but also connects retiring farmers or farmers that want to mentor with other farmers. They provided us $50,000 in one-time funding and to enhance our website that is underway and should be completed by this spring. Our farmland access pilot, we are also provided $50,000 per year. We have a RFP out for the pilot project, or it's closed, and we are in the process of finalizing contracts for two organizations that will deliver services to transitioning farmers. Very excited about that. And finally, our emerging farmers office, you provided funding for us to hire a coordinator, and we were able to hire Lillian Otieno, who's just wonderful to work in our emerging farmer office. Next slide, please. Okay, and the next slide, we are seeking, I'm going to cover our drought relief program. We have two parts to our drought relief program that we really released last fall. Not a lot has changed in this. We seek $5 million to cover additional loan requests for the Rural Finance Authority. And really, if you look at the disaster loan program is one of the loans represented within the RFA. There's really two pots of money in the RFA. There's ones that come through bonding. Some loans are funded through that. Some loans are funded through our revolving loan program. The disaster relief program is in the revolving program. And in that, hold on a sec. Currently we have about $3.5 million in the revolving account that can be used for up to seven different programs. MDA has issued about $2.1 million in assistance, though, for disaster loans over the two fiscal years. We also made COVID disaster loans. The RFA has received about 50 inquiries since the board opened up the disaster loan program for drought relief. And I know a lot of those are for buying feed. Again, took questions this morning from farmers trying to look at the best way to get on this. We also think the scope of this disaster will linger for quite a while. So with one-time dollars, it would be helpful to boost that revolving loan account and help secure it as we move forward. And then we also have, you can go to the next slide, Nancy. Our drought relief grant program is also $5 million. And this is MDA will issue non-competitive rapid response grants for livestock and specialty crop producers impacted by recent drought conditions this last year. The max grant awards would be $5,000 to $10,000. We would need legislative authority for $10,000. We could do $5,000 and be matched one-to-one with producer-eligible expenses. The agency's plan, we would set aside $1 million if the legislature were to do $5 million. Again, these are all scalable if the legislature chose to do $3 million or $8 million. But in the $5 million plan, we would set aside $1 million for both livestock and specialty crops. And this is where this grant program is directed, knowing that crop insurance doesn't make corn, soybean, wheat farmers whole, but it's a lot better safety net than what our specialty crop growers and our livestock producers have. And that's why we're focusing on this this issue. So we would set $1 million aside for each of those for the cattle farmers and $1 million for the specialty crop growers. And then we would look at the uses that are coming in, and then we would divide up the money going forward to that. We would also use some of the money to contract with organizations that serve beginning and emerging farmers to make sure we're performing outreach to assist with the application reimbursement process. A lot of the farmers and especially crop grow, you know, maybe for farmers markets and pieces like that. One other point I just want to make before I turn it over to Deputy Bobble to walk through the other pieces is the governor did open a portal in the fall, early fall and late summer to get these ideas to come through from organizations. So what you're going to see in this budget, including the drought relief, are ideas that came to the administration and as I've traveled the state that would help us move out of COVID, how that would help be a response for us in one time, things that we're seeing that would help move the state forward. So wanted to make that point too as well. So I'm gonna turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Bobble to walk through some of the other pieces in the budget. Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Again, for the record, my name is Andrea Vavel. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Ag. Good to see you all. So I'm just gonna go through the rest of a very robust governor's budget that we're very excited to go through with you today. So first, we're gonna start with meat processing. So as you know, with COVID, it laid bare certainly a number of the issues that that exist within our food systems, and meat processing was one of them. So this is an additional $3 million. It's a supplemental program outside of the existing agri appropriation to provide grants for meat, poultry, egg, and milk processors. So we anticipate it'll be administered similar to the ones we did previously, but this is really to get at the capital and equipment investment that's needed to build out the regional and local meat processing needs. Next slide. Meat processing employee incentives. This is $3 million. I'm sorry. This is $3 million for that. One of the things we heard from folks is that while they need the capital investment made and the funds for that, a significant portion of the issue that they have operating is labor. So this would be $3 million to local and regional economic development agencies who can work directly with meat processors to incentivize folks with sign-on bonuses, relocation allowances, childcare stipends, and other things, again, to be able to help build up that labor force in a much needed industry. Next slide. This is $2.5 million. It's grants to Central Lakes College and Bridgewater College. It's to build on the existing funding that you all provided in the last budget. It will provide an infusion of funding necessary for equipment and infrastructure that we're hearing they could use, particularly for electric, water, and sewer, facility rental, scholarships, and outreach. Again, we were so grateful for the investment that you all made in the technical program that's needed. And this would just be another infusion to help build that out a little bit more. Next slide. This is $200,000 to increase the resources for our USDA equivalent meat testing. So this allows our world-class lab, one that we're very proud of and many of you know very well, to match the federal funds that we receive for analyzing the meat samples we receive quite frequently. So this is to help supplement the direct appropriation we already get. We need to be able to continue the services that we're providing. And it's a required testing program as part of the work we do with USDA equal to meat program. So this would be a $50,000 investment ongoing starting in fiscal year 22. Next slide. Governor's budget, we're asking for $5 million in hunger relief. So we're building off an existing general fund appropriation that a number of you are very familiar with, the Second Harvest Heartland and an existing general fund appropriation we give to Second Harvest Heartland. It's called Farm to Food Shelf. And this also complements a coronavirus relief fund allocation that was provided to Second Harvest, as well as the food group to purchase additional dairy and meat products and cultural appropriate food to meet client needs. We are still hearing quite a bit of need. There is a significant need for hunger relief dollars. COVID obviously was a huge piece of that, and we're hoping that we can build on some of the infrastructure we already have within our agency to help some of these much needed folks. We would also require that a portion of the purchases be from Minnesota producers or processors, so to have a dual purpose of supporting both hunger relief and that community in Minnesota. Next slide. We're asking for $1.5 million for to support the Local Emergency Assistance Farmer Fund, or the LEAF program, that's operated by the Good Acre. So this is a program that started up during the pandemic, and we've known it to be very successful, and that there's certainly a need. So we want to be able to help fill that. This program funds, the funds through this program would pay for BIPOC farmers for excess crops and donates 100% of them to organizations providing hunger relief in the Twin Cities. So certainly, again, a dual purpose of helping with hunger relief, but then also supporting our BIPOC farmers with the excess crops they have, are looking for markets for. Next slide. Expand new markets or e-commerce, $500,000. This builds on a previous cost share grant program that we did during the pandemic. And it was wildly successful. As you know, a number of folks had to change their marketing style pretty quickly as markets disappeared overnight. And a lot of that involved doing the direct marketing and switching to an online or a website platform. Certainly that is not without cost and not without help. So this program really tried to aim at getting folks the help, the technical assistance they need, and also help with the e-commerce platforms that are available to them to shift that marketing style. This will, again, build on this by will increase the cost share annual limits that were in place before, and expand the program eligibility to increase investments in development of food safety plans, including HACCP, assistance for businesses to move from cottage food registration to full licenses, participation in incubator and accelerator programs, and then, of course, purchase of farm market, e-commerce platform systems, and participation in more platform types that are out there right now. Next slide. $1 million in food and ag systems planning grants. These would be grants to local governments or regional planning organizations and tribes for planning and plan implementation activities for food and ag-oriented economic development. We're hearing from a lot of folks that there is a need and a want and a desire to invest in their local and regional food systems, but there's a lack of funding available to really look at the strategic and planning pieces that go into making those types of large investments. So this, again, would help those local communities and local regions figure out how they can build up those local and regional and local and regional food systems, but make sure that they're doing it and maximizing the opportunities that they have without wasting dollars. So this is, again, to help them plan that out well into the future. $1.5 million for food retailer improvement assistance. This is to build capacity at food retailers, grocery stores, corner stores, and farmers markets through grants for infrastructure improvement and technical assistance. As we know very well, grocery stores, corner stores, and farmers markets stayed open, and were sort of cornerstones of keeping the food supply going throughout the pandemic. We did a similar program like this with CARES Act dollars and existing funds we already had within the general fund that went over very, very well. But we know that there is a significant need, certainly, again, for infrastructure improvement to both keep themselves safe, their customers safe, and build out the resiliency that they'll need to keep the food system going. Next slide. $2 million in services to immigrant and BIPOC producers and businesses. These will be funds granted to support organizations such as HAFA, LEDC, and MEDA to provide technical assistance, including farm and food business navigators to emerging farmers and non-English speaking producers and businesses. This is, again, building on a program we did through CARES Act dollars last year. It was really successful. The partners that we worked with were fantastic, got the money out to much needed folks, and we know that there's a more of a need. So we wanted to use this opportunity to invest in that side of things a little bit more, knowing that there's some success and infrastructure to build on. Next slide. $1.5 million for farmers market and direct marketing support. So as I mentioned before, farmers markets stayed open and were a significant source of local foods for people in the time that they needed them to be open. This would be a pass-through grant to the Minnesota Farmers Market Association for grants to the many markets we have around the state to help with resiliency and technical assistance. The MDA would also use the funds to aid direct marketing farmers. As I mentioned, a number of farmers within Minnesota had to change their marketing practices and needed some help with that. So again, this is really to help farmers markets maybe with technical assistance when it comes to taxes or new programs that are coming along, or sort of equipment or building infrastructure that they'll need to be more resilient and still be the cornerstone of their communities. Next slide. IT modernization, $2 million. So we certainly, again, through COVID, we had to switch very quickly, as did many, to more of an online platform to be able to offer our services safely and efficiently. So we know that there are a number of people that work with our agency, but have several different licenses or certifications that they need to work on. So they're working through a number of our units throughout the agency. We're really hoping that we can make the platform that both our customers and Minnesotans are using, as well as our staff, to really get with the times and be easy to use, easy to access, and really make things more efficient for farmers who are trying to access our services. So $2 million will really just lay the foundation for that. We've used the $2 million for a new initiative designed to ensure that MDA has the information technology infrastructure necessary to accomplish its strategic goals and priorities. Again, as I mentioned, we really want to make sure that what we're offering on an online platform is easy to use and accessible for those accessing it. Co-packing grants, $500,000, establishes a new competitive grant program designed to support manufacturers who offer co-packing or manage commercial kitchens and other key supply chain infrastructure, such as added cold chain capacity. I think a number of you have heard this, but we've heard loud and clear from a number of our Minnesota businesses that in order for them to expand or for businesses to invest here, we're lacking significantly in co-packing infrastructure. And so then that is a key part of the supply chain. And so we want to be able to help offer some assistance to make sure we build that out if we're serious about having Minnesota food companies invest and grow and build those regional and local food systems. Animal disease preparedness and response, $1.5 million. This is funding to prepare for and respond to a foreign animal disease, such as African swine fever or high path avian influenza. As mentioned, and a number of you are well aware, high path was again found in the US and I think most recently in Indiana. We had a large outbreak in 2015 that was absolutely devastating to the turkey industry. And African swine fever, of course, as you know, is right on our shores and significantly an economic burden to the pork industry here. We know that if we prepare, we are much better able to respond. You all were wonderful in setting up an ag emergency fund at the department, and we stood up the Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response led by Lucy Hunt. But we know we're going to need some additional dollars to make sure that, especially as we brace for impact from these two diseases, amongst others, we're going to need the energy, the staff and the equipment to be able to respond efficiently. Next slide. Grain Indemnity Fund, $5 million. Establish a grain indemnity fund that will protect producers who have unpaid grain sales when grain buyers or warehouses become financially insolvent. We are requesting a one-time investment from the state of the $5 million to establish the fund, which then will be replenished through fees associated with the sales of grain. So as you all know very, very well, there have been a number of elevator failures over the last few years. And until you experience it, it is absolutely devastating for the farmers who are affected. So we felt like with the surplus that we have, that it made sense to have the state do a large investment on the front end. And then we could create our own grain indemnity fund similar to many of the states surrounding us. We are one of the very few Midwest states that do not have one of these. We have designed a program that I think would work very well, which we'll go into. If you have questions, we can go into that a little bit more. But we feel like now's the time to really have this conversation because of the many insolvencies that we've been experiencing and farmers have been suffering through. Next slide. Farm Business Management, $500,000. This builds on an existing agri appropriation that a number of you are familiar with, that are scholarships for FBM or Farm Business Management scholarships to beginning farmers. This builds on that existing appropriation and targets farmers facing mediation and farmers involved in specialty crop production in urban agriculture. We certainly see a need and want to be able to have that not serve just beginning farmers, but as well, but the ones who are going through mediation and others getting into urban agriculture. Next slide. Waste prevention and sustainable packaging assistance, $150,000. This came directly from fruit and veggie growers that we work with quite a bit. Some of you are familiar with the Food Safety Modernization Act, or we call it FSMA. It's a federal law that we've been implementing over a couple of years. This would help produce growers and businesses market value-added products to comply with this law. We are hearing as part of the FSMA implementation, it requires quite a bit of use of packaging or one single-use packaging. We know that that's quite the economic cost for farmers, as well as not the environmentally sustainable approach that we want to take. So this would be funds to help them increase their use of sustainable packaging materials instead of the single use, and then also do some research and development into creating additional sustainable options to meet the industry standards that are set by FSMA. Next slide. $1 million for the Noxious Weeds Grant Program. You are all very familiar with this. They've invested this before, and we are very grateful. It's grants to local units of government and tribal nations for noxious weed detection, control, and management. This would be, again, a $1 million investment. You're very familiar with a number of noxious weeds that we've talked about in this committee, most famously Palmer amaranth. We also have poison hemlock and wild parsnip and other noxious weeds that threaten the agricultural systems we have in Minnesota. So we've heard that this program is very well received. There's a need. And we want to be able to fill that need. $3 million for the Forever Green Initiative. So you are all very familiar with the great program that is set up over at the University of Minnesota. So this would be an additional $3 million pass-through grant from MDA to Forever Green. It will be used to drive development of decentralized and regionalized supply chains for continuous delivering cover crops. Most famously, most folks know Kernza. Excellent. Healthy Soil Grant Program, we're doing as part of the governor's climate package, we're doing sort of a joint effort with our partner, Bowser, which I will turn over to them shortly. The MDA side of this is $12 million to establish a new grant program at the department that supports soil health principles by funding equipment, subscriptions of equipment technology, seedlings and amendments, technical assistance, and other things. We heard loud and clear from many folks who want to implement some of these best management practices on their land that there's some barriers that they're running into, particularly the cost of equipment and technical assistance. So we wanted to provide a grant program and see how this might work to see if we could help those farmers overcome some of those barriers and get those things implemented. We would prioritize principles or proposals that support soil health principles, are ag water quality certified or seeking certification, reduce or avoid greenhouse gas emissions, and support other complementary public or private programs. So I will kick it over to Angie for a couple slides just to talk about Bowser's work here.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Vobel. Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and thank you for having us today. So Bowser is partnering with the Department of Ag on soil health that really uses each agency's strength in ways that can be most effective to Minnesotans. So we all know that one of the most effective ways to improve soil health is to keep farmland covered with vegetation for much of the year. Practices like cover crops, perennial vegetation, conservation tillage, conservation grazing, protect soil from water and wind erosion and reduce nutrient loss. Minnesota's nutrient reduction strategy identifies cover crop needs of 1.9 million new acres by 2025, and over 10 million new acres by 2040. Next slide, please. So where are we today? Farm census data indicates that less than 3% of Minnesota ag land includes cover crops. And as Assistant Commissioner Vabo was saying, some of those common hurdles to implementation is the time that it takes to establish, lack of information specific to northern climates, lack of access to equipment, and lack of funding to sufficiently offset the risk that it takes until the crop is established. So Bowser's portion of the governor's recommendation would provide financial incentives to farmers to help offset their risk. We also work with the Minnesota Office for Soil Health, who provides soil education, promoting grower networks, and researching best practices towards healthy farms and ecosystems. Individual farmers, ag trade organizations, conservation interests have all informed both of our agencies of their desire to see greater emphasis on soil health, and they want agencies to work on these identified barriers. So this joint endeavor with the Department of Ag and with Bowser will directly address these obstacles and focus on voluntary implementation towards soil health. Back to you, Commissioner.
Thanks, Andy. This is just a quick overview of some of the budget neutral changes that the governor proposed as part of his budget. One is for the Oriented Strand Borer Production Incentive. That's a program that was written into our part of the budget last cycle. It is, there's no funding in it as of right now, but it's similar to the bioincentive program that we have. We just added an additional some language to allow for admin should their money should become available. As we know, it is quite a bit of administration that we know with some of the other production incentive programs that we have. So we want to make sure that we can cover the cost if money becomes available. Livestock investment grant statute changes. This eliminates the 50,000 lifetime cap and reduce qualifying expenditures from 500 to 250,000 per year. We're coming into some issues where there might be a certain entity that a grandparent might have accessed the livestock investment grants, but they're trying to pass it down to another family member or somebody else. And because that entity has hit the 50,000 cap, the new owners or those that they have shifted ownership to are not able to access the funds. So we're looking to eliminate that cap and allow that that transition over to folks who want to make some new investments. Farm safety grants amendment, that's just to allow use of funds to roll over from year one to two. You've all made some great investments, particularly for grain bin safety and the rollover protective structures. This just allows us to move those funds over if we don't use them all. Ag cooperative grant reinstatement, this allows us to just give dollars to cooperatives should money become available. Right now within the statute, it is not an eligible entity, so we just want to make sure that it can be should money become available. And then Ag BMP eligibility expansion. We talked a lot about the Ag BMP loan program. This would just expand the ability to fund surface water intake projects. Next slide. This is just a quick summary of the investment looking for fiscal year 22 and 23 at 50 million, and then ongoing to 24, 25, 12.5 million. And with that, I might just shift right into the bonding request, if that's okay, or do you want me to pause for questions here?
We could take a break if you want. If there's any questions so far, we could entertain those questions now. Any questions from the committee thus far? Representative Hansen's got his hand up first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just looking through a press release from USDA dated February 3rd, where $10 billion in much needed disaster relief including specifically $750 million for livestock producers impacted by severe drought. And then I see a little lower than that, USDA to invest $1 billion in climate smart commodities, expanding markets, climate activities. So it seems that we're not operating in a vacuum here, that there is a lot of activity occurring, and just wondering about redundancy and if people get paid a couple times for the same thing. That's one question. On how are you working with USDA on these requests? The other is, there are a lot of businesses that fail that have insurance, that they have to have insurance in order to make sure their customers are there. Are there businesses that fail where their customers don't get anything and they have to go into bankruptcy? So I'm very cautious about using general taxpayer dollars to bail out bad management or corruption if there's a grain facility failure. What provisions are there so that if you have a board on a grain facility that is gone underwater, that the people who are responsible for that, rather than the general taxpayers, have to cover some of that cost. Because if there's no responsibility, we're going to see more and more of this if the general taxpayer has to pick up the cost.
You care to tackle that, Commissioner Ball?
Mr. Chairman and members, and Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, I'll take a crack at a couple of those. First and foremost, we work very closely with the USDA. You participated, I think, in many of our calls this summer with the USDA and working closely with what they have put on the table for disaster relief. But keep in mind, and we have cattle producers that are on the committee here, that the dollars that are offered back to the state and farmers may work for some farmers. They may not work for them. They may qualify for them. They may not. Our program is unique in that we're reimbursing farmers for things they may not cover, whether it's fencing, watering wells. This is similar to North Dakota did with their state budget, recognizing that their farmers were in distress. And something that our farmers, both our stakeholders, I know not a word you like, but trust me when I say I've been around. I go to our auction on Thursdays and visit with the farmers out there, that they could use a hand. And so basically this program is something we've done before. We did it with dairy farmers a couple of years ago, would help pay a bill or two. What farmers lost this last year is and what the USDA is offering through the livestock program or the specialty crop program is not going to make our farmers whole. But our program that we're proposing, again, could be scaled one way or another, is going to help pay a bill or two. Again, talking to farmers right now, and we don't know when that federal money is going to come. The federal money takes time to trickle out, where the state, we know we could get money in their hands right now. Again, I talked to a dairy farm yesterday in western Minnesota. He is out of hay. I talked to a farmer this morning in Chisago. They are out of hay. They are very stressed in the bills and things that they want to have. With the state, with the surplus that we have right now as an administration, we think it would be helpful to help keep those small livestock producers on the land, help those specialty crop growers and enhance and get them going and give them a hand up for this next year. And so we do work closely with the federal government to tailor our program to help cover things that they may not cover, but there will be some redundancy, but again, will not come anywhere close to covering the cost of having to sell and not have your product to continue. And then as far as insurance with livestock, and there's, again, people on the committee here, where insurance for livestock is very expensive, and also specialty crops is just not caught up in working with a lot of our growers in that as the main commodities have. I agree with you. I ran my business. I ran and watched that very carefully. And so it's an excellent point that you make, but it's unfortunately not affordable. And so my main point with this drought package is that the state has a surplus. It would be helpful to put some dollars in and help give these people a hand up as they're going into this coming year. And then Mr. Milanowski, I don't know if you would like to answer the grain indemnity part of Representative Hansen's question. If he needs to restate it, let me know. But I'm gonna have him answer that part.
Mr. Milanowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. The proposal that we have put forth does have the ability for the MDA to go after bad actors, and even in the case of fraud or gross negligence, we would have the ability to pursue those individuals that were bad actors in the case of a insolvency. So we have baked that into our proposal this year, and we certainly want to make funds available and make them available early to producers or sellers of grain, but it also allows on that back end for the Department of Agriculture to pursue a reimbursement of that indemnity fund through bankruptcy proceedings or some other processes.
Did you have a follow-up, Chair Hansen?
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair, and you know, we had businesses in Minneapolis and St. Paul that were affected by a human disaster who were ineligible for disaster payments. And I think many of them never did receive any money from the state. So it's just, you know, it seems that we are inequitable in our response to disasters. I think overall we need to make sure we're helping people when they need that help, and that includes people who may, for no fault of their own, their business got burned up or destroyed. Wasn't their fault. And so just want to make that point.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Chair Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question pertains to the drought relief package, more specifically on the recovery loan. Just want to know who usually qualifies for that loan. And I see that, you know, gross revenue is a critical factor in that. What's the current gross revenue, and what does, you know, if we amend it to 20%, what is that number?
Yes.
Commissioner.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman and Madam Vice Chair. We also do have a part of our package would be to address that, and I would like Mr. McDevitt to address that issue. Matt?
Sorry about that.
McDevitt?
Yes, committee members, my name's Matt McDevitt. I'm Ag Finance Supervisor. You wanted to know about the disaster loan relief in regards to the drought. So currently we have about 10 applications for about $1.2 million. We continue to get multiple requests for loans or, you know, inquiries as far as these go. So they continue to come in. They tend to process relatively quickly as people need the money. Sooner rather than later. So, you know, our normal timeline, maybe from a loan request to funding, might be 2 or 3 months. But when we're talking about these disaster loans, they tend to be more like, you know, three to four weeks from 2 to 4 weeks anyway, from start to finish.
Qualifications, so too, Matt, if you could talk about
that. Yeah, qualifications. You know, we're pretty open with this. They kind of just state what they need, where their shortfall is. You know, we do work these as a participation loan with a local bank. So they tend to do a little bit more of the legwork as far as verifying on the qualifications and provide us kind of a list of, you know, what's costing what. Generally speaking, most of the stuff we've seen recently has just been pure feed charges and how much they need based on per head and things of that nature. So they come up with a total, and then we do our split with the local lender.
Thank you. Any follow-up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. I remember in the slide that there's like a gross revenue number, and you guys want to amend it 20% lower, reduce it to 20%. What does that look like?
Mr. McDivitt.
Okay. Representative Bang, yes, we're looking to do that. The primary focus of that has to do with being able to help out some of the younger farmers. There's a lot of off-farm income that especially farmers that are starting out need to do, so they might be making significantly more money off their off-farm job as they're just building their farm business. However, you know, if they're running into a major problem like this, it could absolutely sink them and, you know, send them out of farming, at least temporarily, if not permanently. So we just kind of wanted to be a little more expansive on being able to include some younger or beginning farmers.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, one last follow-up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. McDevitt. I appreciate that intent. I would like to know what that number is, whether that's, you know, under 250,000 gross revenue, or more than that, will be helpful in helping me see who's able to qualify for this, and help me understand the because I know when going through the banks do require a lot of paperwork that often, you know, specialty crop producers don't really have the technical assistance to provide all those paperwork. And so I just want to know, understand more of that process. Thank you.
Sure, Representative Vang. The gross income figure is just, it's their accounting practices. So if they don't have something worked up, you know, the fact that they're working with a bank, the banker will usually help them put something together to either, you know, establish what their gross income is or what they expect it to be based on prices and things like that. And then we just compare that to their income that they make off farm.
Okay. Thank you. Next up we have Representative Lippert. With a question, pick a commissioner.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the department's commitment to soil health and Bowser's commitment to soil health too. So two quick questions. Assistant Commissioner Volvo, you mentioned in the slide funding commitment and subscription of equipment technology. Just wondering if you could say a little bit more about what that means. And second, Ms. Becker-Kadelka mentioned a couple numbers, 1.9 million acres by 2025 and then 10 million acres by 2040. I'm wondering, and maybe I missed it, wondering if that's a goal or if that's what you think these funds can accomplish. Just wondering if you can say a little bit more about those numbers and what they mean.
Commissioner Vobel, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippert. I will let, we have our experts, Brad Jordahl Redlin on here, who's helping develop this program. So I might just have him speak to that a little bit better than I would.
Mr. Redlin.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. The grants through the MDA portion of this is for equipment. This is a primary obstacle for adoption of soil health practices, whether it be the tillage, be the planting. And there's often a technology component that goes along with that equipment for its optimal performance or even its basic performance. So we wanted to incorporate in this grant opportunity all that's necessary so that we don't leave someone hanging without really what they need to do this. So that's what's being described there. And it's important in particular, if I may say, that this is kind of unique and revolutionary in the fact that equipment grants are just not available as grants through federal sources in any of the Farm Bill programs or really in the cost share that we actively do currently in the state. So it's really an exciting opportunity to confront a major obstacle to the further expansion of soil health throughout the state to provide this opportunity to get the actual tools that will deliver soil health. So I appreciate the question.
Representative Lippert, any follow-up on those responses?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So are the grants then mediated through the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program?
No, they're not. No, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, no, they are not. This is a separate program. There is mention of water quality certification program, but as it is any other soil health aligning program, it is also included in terms of prioritizing any efforts that we make sure to get the really the maximum results for the investments made.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Kadelka, could you respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert. Yeah, the Minnesota Nutrient Reduction Strategy was adopted by, I believe it was 11 organizations in 2014, and it calls for reducing nutrient levels in major rivers by 10 to 20% by 2025. There's higher term reductions by 2040. And so as one component of that strategy, it called for and identified that cover crops should be a part of the solution. And so in order to meet these overall strategies with all these different components, it said that there was a need for 1.9 million new acres by 2025. And that was where that number had come in. So that strategy is located on the Pollution Control Agency's website. If you just Google nutrient reduction strategy, the most recent version is there.
Quick follow-up. Representative Bloomberg?
That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Burkle, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question about the Ag Emergency Fund. As was alluded to earlier, we've got this high path AI case in Indiana. getting much, much more concern out there among the folks in the industry about what's going to happen this spring. So I was curious if anyone can answer where the balance is on that fund right now. I'm glad to see $1.5 million going in to be prepared, but where are we at right now at this moment?
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkle, you're correct. This is a really fast developing concern, and I'd like Ms. Hunt to answer that question and maybe talk a little bit about what the extra dollars would be used for and what we, you know, kind of work with that fund, because I think it's important to understand the role that we do play in this.
Yes,
thank you. Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. Yes, you're correct with the high pathogen influenza discovery yesterday in Indiana. Our incident management team is doing what it does best and focusing on on new issues. We've been really looking at the swine industry over the last couple of years, and now we're fully invested in turning this into a poultry response. The last for your question about the funds available, the last number that I have is $425,839 in the Ag Emergency Account. And the request that that we are making for additional funds will be used. These are for multiple commodities. These preparedness activities can be used for any different industry. We've got, we're looking at depopulation and disposal issues that can take care of carcasses from on farms. We're looking at information management issues, as well as biosecurity and quarantine, just to make sure that we can prevent disease as best we can. Looking at health, safety, and welfare, including mental health for responders, producers, and processors for an animal disease event. Working with the University of Minnesota on surveillance and diagnostics, making sure that their lab surge capacity is enough that we can depend on them. And finally, a regionalization plan to make sure that we're working closely with our interstate trade partners and to make sure that we can have continuity of business for all of our producers.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Burkle?
Nothing further. Just I know that the Board of Animal Health and the folks at the U of M are on it, and hopefully we don't need to work ourselves into a carcass disposal situation. I'd like to know, I know personally, I've got PCR tests that are probably expired at home on my own farm. I would like to see, you know, that we get PCR tests out to growers ASAP. I think the Board of Animal Health has already talked about that. But the preparedness part of this is important, and you know, holding this off so our industry isn't decimated by the same issue again is really important. So thank you for your answers.
Great. Thank you for your patience, Representative Anderson. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments and then a question, commenting on what the Representative Hansen mentioned about comparing different types of disasters. To me, there's a huge, huge difference between a disaster that's naturally occurring and one that basically is caused by the actions of people. So I don't think that comparison is at all fair. And my other comment is that, this disaster package has been on the table since last August, and $10 million. And in the meantime, you know, our state has suddenly become the recipient of a lot of surpluses, you know, $7 to $8 billion. And I would think that the need out there among especially livestock people is so much greater than a $5,000 grant or whatever that... I would like to see more money put toward helping our livestock folks become not whole again, but to help them through this difficult time when they're facing feed shortages and things like that. So it has been extremely difficult for these folks to work through those situations, and I would support additional aid. My question would go to Commissioner Peterson. the program that's been going, and you mentioned some increased funding in the biennium, but the bioincentive program, you know, there's a lot of things in the governor's supplemental budget. That was not one of them, additional funding for that program. Was that a place we could have looked at, or were you surprised by not having any additional funding in that bioincentive program?
Commissioner Peterson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, yeah, and thank you for the question on the bioincentive. Yeah, I agree. You know, we're about, you know, we just looked at it this morning, and Mr. Huguenin maybe could comment on this too. We're about halfway in funding that program. You know, and we're trying to work with the stakeholders and look at, is there a long-term solution for this? Because I think that as we get out in front of this, we're really funding about half of the program. And so we are working on continuing to have the discussion on this. Wasn't included in this. I would mention that I don't know if it would be included in their updated version that'll be released when the new forecast comes out. We'll be adjusting the budget. We had a lot of things that came in and requests that we had, and this was one that just did not make it all the way through. We did discuss it, we did put it forward, but at the end of the day, it's not currently in our budget. But, you know, I agree with you that it's something we need to address, and, you know, we're continuing to try to figure this out. We just hired a new staff person to work on this program. You know, I'll leave it at that, that you're correct, but I think that our numbers show that we're gonna fund about half of the program that we owe producers this year. And so I think the legislature has looked at, you know, whether we extend the payments out so they're eligible more than the, I think, 10 years that they're eligible for it, but somewhere to pay these folks back, and look forward to continuing to have discussion. I would also point out the last two bienniums that I've been commissioner, we have increased the funding, you know, both bienniums, but we're not quite catching up on that. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if Mr. Huguenin would like to add anything to that or Ms. Bress.
Mr. Huguenin, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Paul Huguenin. And just to kind of confirm what the commissioner mentioned, which is, so we're two quarters into this fiscal year, and we've basically used the first year appropriation of about $4 million. So, you know, based on the claims we've got and the projection from the companies who are claiming, we'll fall about $4 million short for the last two quarters of this fiscal year. Our best projections for fiscal 23 are that there's one ethanol plant that will be making new claims for both advanced biofuels and renewable chemicals. So that would add somewhere between $1 million and $1.5 million. to the claims that we expect to see in fiscal 23. So just to give you a rough idea of what we've got funding for, and current appropriation is $4.5 million per fiscal year. Thank you.
Representative Anderson, anything further?
No, thanks for that update. And I would concur that it's a program that it's exciting as we move ahead into move into some advanced biofuels and such. So I would encourage looking at that even further. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, last question for this segment. Representative Chair Ackland, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, it's exciting to see that we're taking care of our meat producers, going after these, making sure that we have these tests ready to go and that we're taking care of any potential problems that we're going to have. We have a problem right now. It's been noted in several articles about COVID in the whitetail population. And I want to know what type of response Department of Agriculture is making or looking at that, because, you know, obviously it's caused 2 years of devastation to our economy, this pandemic. And if it's being able to move from animals to humans are back, it certainly should be concerned. So I'd just like to see if the agency can comment on that.
Commissioner Peterson, who wants to tackle that one?
Mr. Chairman, I love talking about COVID. Mr. Chairman and Representative, has got done with it myself. And, you know, looking at this issue that you brought up, I think everybody probably saw the news in Iowa, I think was kind of where it first broke, where 80%, I think that kind of caught everybody's eye in the tests that were running. We are working very closely with the Board of Animal Health and monitoring this situation as they oversee the health of, you know, farm deer. And not to get into all this discussion on CWD, which is a very important topic that we're spending a lot of time on chronic wasting disease, but we are looking at COVID. They are examining that. It is something the University of Minnesota is also an important partner on this. I just saw some recent statistics. I don't have it pulled up, but I could share that with you. That shows the percentage is lower that we're finding in the deer herd in Minnesota for whatever reason, which is good news. But we monitor with the board quite extensively, whether it's wild cats. You know, the Department of Agriculture actually does have some regulation on fur farms. And you may have known this or seen this, that we've actually seen COVID in fur-bearing animals like mink. And so it's something that we are trying to stay on top of and be a good partner with them on. And at this time, they're not specific actions that we're taking except for monitoring it very closely. I would also mention that the COVID in general is a top priority for me as commissioner, working with our farmers of all kinds and our plants to keep our food system running carefully. As we had Omicron, we had briefings with our ag groups and our farm groups. You know, I try to be as accessible as possible so we're sure those plants were running, that our farms were running. But it's a, you know, it is really an interesting, as we look at this, Representative Eklund, and I'll see if I can share some of that information that I have from the U on what they're finding.
Any follow-up on this, Chair Eklund?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, I think I want to express the urgency on following through on this because it could potentially be a bad situation state. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Commissioner.
Okay. I guess we're back to Commissioner Vobel to close in on the bonding requests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is our bonding request that we are very excited about. It's for our East Grand Forks facility. It would be used to design, renovate, repair, and equip our potato inspection facility that we have in East Grand Forks. You'll see it pictured there. We're asking for $377,000. Improvements will bring the facility up to current standards and allow MDA to safely continue to provide services out of the facility. Renovations would improve efficiency, meet current health and safety standards, and address deficiencies. We were lucky enough to have the House Bonding Committee come up and tour it as well, so we could sort of show the great things that happened there, but the needs that really exist there right now. So, we also have our staff on, Mr. Milanowski, who can speak to this as well or answer any questions folks have. But we are really hoping that this is something we can get through to make that facility more robust.
And that's it?
Yes.
Wow, we sped through that whole thing. okay, great. We're ahead of schedule here. Any concluding comments from Commissioner Peterson?
Mr. Chairman and members, you know, we're excited to have such a robust budget proposal coming from the governor's office. We know there's things that weren't in there. Again, I just want to highlight that most of these ideas were not my great ideas. These were ideas that came from Minnesotans through the portal that the governor opened up. But they are things that are consistent with what I heard as I've traveled the state extensively in the past year. There are things that are not in this budget, you know, that we do look forward to having a discussion on. Again, I look at this as a menu of things that with the state having a surplus at this time, if the state chose to invest and really help our food system as we're coming out of COVID, these are some things that we think would be very helpful to help our farmers and to help Minnesotans ensure the safety integrity of our food supply. So I look forward to having this discussion with you as we move forward. Feel free to reach out to any of us to discuss any of these proposals at any time. And then on the bonding request, that is our only bonding request at this time. It's important. The potato industry is not huge in Minnesota, but it's an important part And it does provide a lot of jobs, especially up in the Valley and central Minnesota, and appreciate your consideration and support for that. Thank you for the time today.
Okay. Any other questions to the department regarding the bonding? Okay. I guess that concludes our business.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, who do we have?
Representative Anderson.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Anderson, please. You're on mute, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick couple of comments on bonding. Commissioner Bobble, if you can do all that up in East Grand Forks for that price, that's pretty blame good. I've heard that you can hardly build a garage for that price. So if you can do all that up there, that's a pretty good job of negotiating. But on a more serious vein, you know, with the background of possibly the high path avian influenza again, are there things that the labs need more equipment? I know Representative Eklund will be having a bill heard next week about equipment, but are there things that we could be proactive on and look at picking up through bonding or whatever else, maybe just strictly cash to have us better prepared for a possible outbreak?
Commissioner Vall, please.
I'll let Commissioner Peterson take that one.
Okay, Commissioner Peterson.
No, you know, Representative Hansen, thank you. And as you know, in your area too, just a lot of turkey barns and poultry barns in your area. And thank you for that question as we look at this and stare that down. That we want to work with the committee to really be prepared for this. I appreciate to see Representative Eklund carrying that provision next week too. And if that's something that we can meld together, we're open to that. We want to be sure that we are ultimately prepared as a state to handle this. You know, as I visit with my other commissioners around the country, what we had to go through in 2020, the experiences with hog depopulation, turkey population, those were healthy animals, plus what we've been through in 2015 with poultry depopulations. Dale Lewick has been through the bovine tuberculosis. Our state knows how to do these. Unfortunately, we have a lot of experience. And so we want to really work with the committee to, you know, make sure that if it's bonding or cash that we need to have that equipment in place, you know, whether it's to foamers that we do own and having those upgraded, whether it's composting equipment, whether it's lab equipment, that we want to be prepared to have that. I also want to remind people that both avian influenza and African swine fever are not exclusive to larger commercial operations. These are things that would affect the backyard flocks, and you know, we need biosecurity and people to be aware and on the lookout for these diseases at all levels. And so I think it's a very important issue, and we're open to just working with the committee to ensure that we have the best response possible.
Any follow-up, Representative Anderson?
No, no, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and thanks, Commissioner, for that answer.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Just on your last point there, you know, we have a large Amish population that isn't watching us today or isn't getting on Zoom or whatever, and often they have poultry and different livestock. So I just encourage you to try quickly to maybe find a way of reaching them. They're all over the state and may not have anybody to speak for them. But also I'd like your opinion on an idea that has been around since we are a little bit flush with money right now that could ease with the transition. And that's, we've been focusing on the impact on agriculture, traditional agriculture with animals, but the Board of Animal Health has the responsibility also for companion animals. And would it now be the time to separate those where the Board of Animal Health could be the Board of Animal Agricultural Health or Agricultural Animal Health, and that we have a companion animal board to separate those two responsibilities so that they can focus on their areas of expertise and realizing there is some cross-pollination there, but is it time now, in your opinion, to separate those two?
Thank you. Comments? Commissioner Peterson.
Representative Hansen, thank you for your comments on the Amish community. You know, Minnesota, we really have a very vast Amish. You know, I see the numbers and I think it's way underreported just based in my own area, the area you're familiar with, central Minnesota. Ms. Hunt, I know, is very aware of this issue, and it's a part of the process of contacting those producers as we go into this. And so I really do appreciate those comments, and they're well taken, and we'll follow up with that as well. And then with the companion board, the department doesn't have a position on it right now, but I will say I have been meeting with the groups that are both for and against this proposal, and I see merits in a companion animal board. I just don't want to have a duplicative board if that goes forward, because I still feel that, and again, this is just more of my personal opinion, that the board is animal health is still ultimately charged with animal disease. But I think that is something for the committees to discuss on the regulation and other thing. I would just say one thing on the companion animals, Representative Hansen, that I think is interesting as I look at it. And again, as a companion animal, what does it all entail or include? We think a lot of dogs and cats, but I also think about my miniature horses and other things. What is it all about? So I've been open to having discussions about it, but don't have a position on it at this time. But again, willing to keep working on it and have that discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner. Follow up, Chair Hansen.
Yeah, we have reptiles, insects, birds, a number of things that are there. I thought you were going to go there, but I wasn't thinking about the tiny horses, but thank you. I think we have work to do, and I think now is the time for us to do something. Thank you.
Okay. On the topic of Amish farmers, if anybody would like to see some of the advertising that they have out there, I'd be glad to share some of those samples of them advertising their products throughout Minnesota. Representative Miller, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment on separating out the Board of Animal Health with a small animal board also, or whatever, companion animal, or whatever it's called. You know, I was deeply involved in 2015 with the high path avian influenza. I worked closely with locals when we had to depopulate in the last year or so. And particularly going back to 2015, I would argue that this would be the worst time to try and separate this stuff out and shake up the Board of Animal Health when they're really trying to bear down on this. I know it can be simplified to say, well, then they have more time on this and they don't have to worry about those other things. But this is the veterinarians in the Board of Animal Health are top notch, top flight. I have always been impressed with the work that the entire board has done, and to come in and shake up a very good, well-run organization with possible impending clouds on the horizon just would be short-sighted, and I don't think we should be doing that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions, comments to share with the committee from the committee? Okay, hearing none, I'll be in contact with Chair Lee going forward on bonding requests. So any additional information that should be shared, please get it to me in the coming few weeks here, couple of weeks. So seeing no other hands up, this meeting's adjourned.